I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie. I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Welcome to the Fried Egg Golf Podcast. I'm Garrett Morrison, and my guest today is Angela Moser. Angela was the lead associate for the construction of Pinehurst No. 10. That's a Tom Doak design that opened in early April. It's the first course that Pinehurst has built since the 90s, and it's the first project for what will be called Pinehurst Sandbines. This is kind of a satellite facility, about a 10-minute drive from the main hub of the resort. And the land is really dramatic in this area, really different from what you see on the first 9 Pinehurst courses. So this is a major project and a major opportunity for Angela Moser. Angela has worked for Tom Doak for about 13 years at this point, but this was actually the first time she served as the lead associate on a construction job. So she was on hand earlier this week for a little media function that the resort held at the No. 10 course, and after that, I was able to sit down with her in the library at the Holly Inn in Pinehurst and talk a bit about the course and her career. It was a really fun conversation, and that's coming up in this episode. But first, a word about our sponsor, Oars and Alps. Oars and Alps makes skincare products designed with men's needs in mind. They're built for an active, on-the-go lifestyle, and they use clean, powerful ingredients. So I was very thankful for Oars and Alps during the media day at Pinehurst No. 10. For the most part, it was sunny and warm and actually really nice, but there was like a 15-minute rainstorm that just nailed us on our second hole of the day. So we got soaked, and then literally 5 minutes later, it was bright sunshine and eventually got to about 90 degrees. So this is a real test of a sunscreen. Fortunately, I was wearing my Oars and Alps Hydrating SPF 50 Spray. This is a top seller for Oars and Alps. It has a non-greasy formula and a subtle fragrance. But the main thing is that it's water and sweat resistant. So throughout the rain and the heat, I was protected at Pinehurst No. 10, and I did not get a sunburn. So for Fried Egg listeners, this is the deal Oars and Alps is offering. 15% off with the code EGG15. That's EGG15 at oarsandalps.com/friedegg. All right, let's get to my interview with Angela Moser. Angela, how did you find out about the Pinehurst No. 10 project?
So I was going to do a little road trip and play some golf. And Tom was like, oh, perfect. Where are you going? I'm like, yeah, probably start in Pinehurst and then meander down. I really wanted to see what Brian Schneider and Blake Conan did at Old Barnwell, and then also the tree farm that Kai Golby and Zach Blair shaped. And he's like, okay, well, I'll meet you in Pinehurst. And that was just after our Renaissance Cup in Ireland at St. Patrick's. And turned out he caught COVID. And I was going there by myself. And he's like, I'll send you a map. Look at the map. And I'm like, okay, well, this looks pretty cool. What is this? I was like, well, they approached me to build Pinehurst No. 10. And I want you to go there, pitch it to them, and then, you know, you would be the lead associate. This would be your first lead job for me. And what do you think? And I'm like, oof. That's, you know, that's pretty heavy. That's a big, big, big project to start as a lead associate for Tom. There's, you know, I don't want to say there's pressure. Yeah, there's pressure, but it's so heavy because this whole town just loves and lives golf, and you know, you just want to do a really good job. And then of course it's not just the town, it's like it's a cradle of American golf. And then there's, you know, everyone from Renaissance Golf that I just felt like I really want to make this a special place, and you know, I want them to be proud and want them to come back and say like, oh yeah, this was really cool, and this was very enjoyable and turned out really, really good. So I don't know if I'll make myself a lot of pressure, but yeah, there was a lot of that.
Pressure can be a good thing, right?
Yeah, it keeps you going for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
What did you think when you first saw the property out there?
Really grand. Like the topography is just nothing I've seen on any other Pinehurst course. And, you know, it was undeveloped for such a long time, so that you had a lot of different vegetation out there and a lot of wildlife. And it was just the sanctuary out there in the middle of nowhere. And I thought it was so beautiful. So yeah, I really, really liked it. And the rolling hills of Pinehurst in North Carolina are just, you know, perfect for golf. So it was beautiful.
Was there anything about the site that when you looked at it, some detail of it that made you think that might make it a little bit tricky?
The gas line?
Of course. Well, tell me about the gas line.
So there's a gas line that's crossing hole one. It used to cross hole two as well, but we avoided that. It crosses hole 6, 7, 8, and 18. And, you know, you're not allowed to basically even drive your normal truck over it, because, you know, you don't know how deep the gas pipeline is, and yeah, you don't want to blow up. So
don't want somebody to take a bulldozer in there and hit the wrong thing.
You don't want to get a bulldozer close to it. And then you also want to, you know, we had special crossing points where, you know, we built up dirt to have like a dirt bridge over the gas line. And those were the only points where you could actually access from one side to the other. Yeah, so it's a bit more complicated, but I think we managed our way around.
Well, you have this big kind of straight cut through the property where this gas line is, and you can see it if you're looking for it. But if you're just playing the golf course, you might not notice it. And I think that's probably a credit to the routing of the course and how the course gets across it in a variety of different ways. So like, how did you and Tom manage that when you were, you know, coming up with the routing for the course? How did you think about like working your way around the gas line and across it in ways that didn't feel like repetitive?
So basically Tom's trick is that you play over the gas line, always, you know, you don't have a landing area anywhere close to the gas line. So on hole one, you have your drive, and then you hit over it to the green and you just walk over it. And it's actually a fairway that's split up between your drive and, you know, the second landing area and approach. So we renaturalized that. So you don't really, we're trying to hide it as much as we can. On hole 6, it's the same idea. Like you have your drive and your second shot is actually playing over it. And what we did is, again, renaturalizing the area and actually make it more looking like, not like, ravine is the wrong word, but like a little washy, like a washout type of thing with native plants in it. And because the topography on hole 6 is actually, you know, everything washes onto the gas line, and we didn't want the the gas line to wash out. We had to just, you know, slightly change the shaping of the area without, you know, getting into the gas line. So there was a little bit of work to be done there. But again, your second shot plays over it because you're crossing the hazard, and the hazard, you know, is kind of part of the gas line.
What was the basic timeline for the construction of this course? It was pretty quick, right?
it just went down so quick. We normally calculate with about 10 months of construction. It really depends on the site, on the soil, and, you know, how much help we have, you know, what kind of, if you have a contractor, if you have the whole team behind you shaping, you know, there are a lot of things that influence like the outcome on how quick you can be, how efficient you can be. And over here, there were a lot of resources, you know, with the support of Pinehurst. And then we had our contractor was Labar Golf Renovations. So they put up a lot of people just to help and, you know, get this turfed and finished as quick as possible.
Was it about a year?
It was less than a year.
It was.
So, we normally calculate.
It opened in this. I mean, it just recently opened now, basically.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So construction started on January 17th. I got my visa on January 16th because I need a work visa since I'm from Germany. So I got the email. Yes, you can pick up your passport in the embassy on January 16th. So my mom drove me to the embassy, picked up my passport, and she drove me straight to the airport. I took the next flight, and the next day I was, you know, on a bulldozer.
Wow. And there was already, I remember there was already kind of publicity going out about the project too at that point. I think it was in January 2023 when I first heard about it, when we were kind of first reporting on it. And so it must have become real really quickly.
Yeah, it just, you know, from walking the site, I think that was, I was over here in October. I was here in October and just walked the site. And then trying to get my visa as quick as possible. Yeah, I've been here in December to just, you know, meet Tom, and we had like one site visit where we both were here and looking at like, okay, clearing corridors, like how far are we clearing these holes? And then, you know, all of a sudden it's January and 80% of the golf course was already cleared. And I think that's kind of when they announced, when Pinehurst announced, oh yeah, and by the way, we're already clearing, and you know, construction starts soon. And everyone was taken by surprise and excitement, I think. And yeah, it was amazing. And you came from Germany out of nowhere into like this excitement. It was just, yeah, go, go, go.
And you were finished with shaping. Grass was going on the course by when last year? November, October?
No. Tom pointed out he approved the last green in June.
Oh my gosh. Seriously?
Seriously.
Yeah. I mean, now that I think about it, usually grass doesn't go down that late in the year, but that's amazing. So it was like a 5-6 month just dash to get everything shaped.
I mean, you had most of it shaped, but then there was still, sure, that those were greens. And then you have a couple bunkers that you want to touch up, or you have a couple tees still to build. So you do that, and that's after June, obviously. So, you know, by September, we were playing all 18 holes. And, you know, if there was anything that we wanted to change or we wanted to add a tee box or something, we were able to do that still because it was September. You can saw it until November or December, no problem.
So this is your first time as a lead associate on a project, and that comes with a number of kind of managerial responsibilities. You're overseeing a lot of aspects of the construction. Tom Doak is on site a good bit, but is not on site all the time. You were actually living here and supervising this project. And so that seems to me to be a really different kind of role than a lot of what you did before, which was, for the most part, as I understand it, shaping.
Yeah.
Serving as one of the kind of creatives of the projects that you were doing on a bulldozer out there, focusing on features. So for you, how is being a lead associate different than being a shaper?
I think I had a lot more input in terms of the architecture. It's funny, you think like as a shaper, you have a lot more, you know, a lot more leeway and a lot more influence on the shapes. And, you know, to some extent, yes, that's true. But then sometimes I felt like, okay, what's the overall plan? Well, I think I have a better understanding leading a project, what the overall plan is. And, you know, if someone else is leading and you just help out as a shaper, you're just focusing on an area and you're asking the lead associate, what's the bigger picture here? What is the plan? What, you know, and being that person on this job was just really cool. I so enjoyed it. It was amazing because you see so many facets of the profession that, you know, yeah, were completely new. I don't know. I dipped my toes into, you know, a little bit of supervising and leading before, but obviously not to this extent. But it was fun. And yeah, I can't wait to do it again if I get a chance.
You want to do it again?
Sure.
So is being a lead associate, do you think, less creative than being a shaper or more creative? Or is it a different kind of creativity?
It has a lot to do with organizing the next steps and preparing, you know, like, for example, I knew exactly when Tom would come into town and I knew which holes he wanted to work on. Or, you know, I decided like, okay, this makes the most sense to work on these. And I would communicate that with him and really make sure that everything is prepared to, you know, he wanted to see that kind of cut, or there were like two or three more trees that needed to be cut, or, you know, you name it. I try to make sure that the site is prepared for him coming over and that we get the most out of his visit. And also his visit always comes with getting help from the senior design associates. So having Eric, Brian and Blake come over and help, you know, you want to have something prepared for them to shape the green or, you know, whatever needed to be done and whatever holes we wanted to get shaped and done, you want to have those ready. You can't have that, oh yeah, we still need to clear like some of the root zones or grub something. You want to have it all ready so they can just, here's your bulldozer, go to, you know, hole 10, build a freaking amazing green, and, you know, and that's what they do. And they're so fast and quick and it's inspiring, like how creative they are. And yeah, it's just really cool.
That's one of the things that's interesting about this project and really about a lot of Tom Doak's projects. The shapers on the construction site are a variety of architects who have been working with Tom Doak for a long time. So you mentioned Brian and Brian. That's Brian Slonick and Brian Schneider.
Yeah.
Eric, that's Eric Iverson, Blake Conant. All of these really experienced architects were coming to this project and shaping greens on the construction site that you were supervising. Mm-hmm. Tom Doak also shaped a couple of greens out there.
Yep.
Is this, you know, you've worked for a couple of other architects, but not like a lot. You haven't gone all over the place to a bunch of different architects. Is this a fairly unique way of working? Like, do other architects do this where they're bringing in really experienced people like this to just shape a couple of greens?
So I worked with Gil Hans for a little while, and it was slightly different, I want to say, in terms of Gil and Jim Wagner have a really big pool of young, talented architects and shapers, but, you know, they don't always get the chance to build the greens. Jim and Gil take big pride in shaping those greens. I don't want to say that you never get a chance building greens with them. That's not, absolutely not true. I shaped a couple of greens with them, and it was fun. But they really like to be on the machines themselves. So it would be similar to Tom wanting to shape like 90% of the greens. And I think it's fair to say he's saying that a lot. I don't want to put him on a spot, but he keeps saying, like, you know, Eric Iverson, Brian Schneider, and Brian Slonick, they get the vision into the ground so much quicker that, and so much cleaner, that it is so much easier working with like experienced shapers to get something into the ground rather than doing it yourself. Now, we're talking about, these guys have been working with Tom for such a long time. So we have some kind of, you know, similar lingo.
Right. They know what he likes.
They know what he likes. Like. And yeah. If they're talking about it, what the green should do, they know exactly what he wants. And, you know, part of the job is also, and this is the fun part, is like, if you travel a lot, you have seen many places, and, you know, you can only hope that you remember, like, oh, that really cool kicker slope on this green, or like, hey, why don't we build, like, you know, the green of National, you know, hole 5 or something. And the thing is that, you know, we know what that green does. And so do other shapers. Like, we look at those shapes, and whenever Tom, Gil, Jim are looking at building a green, you have those greens in the back of your head, I want to say. And a really good example is hole 11 out here on course number 10. You know, Tom took the inspiration from Crystal Downs, the ninth hole, which is a par 3 uphill. And, you know, it's not the same hole, but it's similar. That's the thing. Like, you're not copy pasting, but there might be similarities, and maybe you change something, or you have like, you know, different bunkers, or you have like a cliff like we do, or, you know, whatever it is, you're just making it unique to this place. I feel like every golf course and every site that we're looking at have their own identity and their own feel, and, you know, this sense of place, like, you know, what's growing here, what are we looking at, what's the vibe. There's so much that goes into it, and just honoring that, and yeah, so it, you know, we're taking some ideas of greens and of holes, but we're making it unique.
All right, I wanted to take a quick break here to talk about Golf Genius Tournament Management. This is the industry's leading platform for managing golf events and tournaments. You'll find them in 60-plus countries and at about 11,000 clubs, resorts, and public courses. They also work with associations, PGA sections, tours and governing bodies, Golf Genius Tournament Management has a real track record of delivering a great experience for golfers. They do everything from event marketing and registration to automatic and personalized communications. They do tee sheets and other printed materials, formats and scoring, beautiful custom leaderboards, a custom event portal, and lots more. They also have mobile scoring and live leaderboard features to add excitement and fun to your events. Service and support come built in with the system, and Golf Genius gets outstanding reviews from its customers for the service and support they provide. Friday Golf is actually an example of this. I can actually speak to this because we use Golf Genius for our events at Friday, and it's just been great. It's been super reliable. We trust Golf Genius to come through for us when we need them to on event day. And that's the key thing, is some trust in your tournament management system. So to check out Golf Genius Tournament Management, go to golfgenius.com/TM. All right, let's get back to Angela Moser. So far, hole 8 at Pinehurst, number 10, has gotten a lot of attention. And I actually want to swerve away from that at this point, because I think that there's probably enough content out there about the 8th hole at this course. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the hole that goes over the big humps and bumps and has a green kind of in a natural or you know, somewhat shaped punch bowl setting. And it's a unique and pretty thrilling hole, but it's been very much discussed so far. So I'm wondering if there's another hole that you think will be the second most discussed.
You know, it's funny. Like, I always thought 11 will be great, and there were, you know, doubts because it's slightly uphill and you can't really see that much of the putting surface. And there were a lot of doubts about how that hole turns out. I think it turned out fantastic. Well, why don't I not start on, let's start with hole one. Hole one is very cool. I like hole one. It's like a little bit of an homage to Pinehurst number 2, how, you know, the green is perched up, it's like tilted. I really like how, you know, some of the bunkering, the native bunkering on the right eats in, and it's very strategic. I think hole 3 has such a beautiful green that Blake Conant shaped. It's sitting on the ground. It's beautifully done. And, you know, this is a very good example, actually. I was standing with Tom and Blake on the green side for hole 3. And Tom directed Blake's, like, you know, make it a little bit like Garden City. So it sits on the ground and you have, you know, a couple contours, but it's falling away. I think he nailed it. It's beautiful at how the bunker are coming into play and making the hole squeeze in the right place. And, you know, I think that's pretty cool. And then hole 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 are a really strong stretch. I really like 11 and 12 and 14.
So the answer to the question, which hole aside from 8 do you think is going to be the most discussed, is every other hole. Here's my take. I think the answer to this question, and not that this is the right answer, this is just my sense of it. I think the answer to the question, which hole is going to be the most discussed, aside from the one that everybody is discussing right now, might be 17. Par 3 across the water to a pretty unique and wild green. Now, a lot of the greens here are pretty subtle. This one is more bold. And you shaped this green. I know this. And so I'm wondering if you could give me any insights into the thought process behind this hole and what you were going for with that very dramatic green.
So the input that I got was, I'm picturing a green that's sloping left to right, and there might be like a bunker here or there, and we'll see what you come up with. That was the input that I got.
And so pretty broad.
Pretty broad, I think. Yeah, and then, you know, you have the pine tree in the back. And I thought, like, okay, to get to a degree where the green is fairly up from the lake to be safe, you know, and not building too low, the back was still going to be more of a punch bowl type of thing. Like it has a, it's not punch bowl. It's a slope that, you know, you can kick in on the left and then, you know, the back is actually bringing your ball back. So there's a slope there. That's more it. And you know, I was just playing with it and I thought, like, yeah, I really like this bunker in the front and having like a little plateau behind it where you can pin it, which is really, really tough to hold it. I really liked how you had that slope in the back and, you know, you could feed your ball back in. And then it just went down to like this front right pin location. And, you know, at some point I thought, like, well, we'll see what Tom thinks. That is a pretty tough pin. And I think the only part that he made me change was that plateau in the front was not deep enough. He paced it off and it was just a couple feet short of like what he would approve. So I had to adjust that slightly to make it work so you can hold a ball and not just always end up in that bunker. But yeah, beside that, he really liked it. And, you know, I remember Brian Schneider walked up and was like, this is pretty cool. So
high praise from Brian Schneider.
That is high praise. I take it anytime, seriously.
So you spent a lot of time in Pinehurst. You probably played the number two course at least a couple of times.
Yeah, I think I played 1.5 rounds.
1.5 rounds. Okay, perfect. I think that's enough to to give a take on the course. Obviously, U.S. Open is coming up. It's going to be at Pinehurst number two. When you look at Pinehurst number two, what is the thing that impresses you the most?
The contouring around the greens is exceptional. You know, you don't see a lot of push-up greens that are so well contoured, so well thought through and challenging. And I could go on and on. Like, they're magnificent, seriously. And the greens are the defense, basically. And it depends what you hit into the green, how you hit it, where the pin is. You might have like a tiny spot. You might have, you know, a really awkward angle. So you have to be smart to, you know, accept it, take the bullet, lay up, use a putter, you know, whatever it is. You have to be very smart here and have a good sense of how you want to play this golf course. And then good luck executing it.
Yeah.
If you miss something, you might end up in a really tough spot. So
right. There's
a lot of defense around the green. And it's not always like a bunker. It might be a contour that you're not aware of or you didn't really see if you play the first time. So, you know, there's a lot that Donald Ross did absolutely right out here. So
did you and Tom think about how Pinehurst number 10 might compare and contrast with the number two course?
Well, if you're building a golf course, you know, the second, third, 10th course for a resort, you always want to be slightly different. You don't want to get mixed up with other courses. So you want to have your own identity and your own, I don't want to say look, that's not right, but you want to get off the golf course and then remember, you know, what was hole 7 again? You know, there's some kind of remembering, recognizing the holes you just played versus everything blending together. So there's, you know, there's a lot of that. And we looked at what can we do on our hilly, very big topography site on course number 10 versus a fairly flat number 2 What can you get away with? Would it wash out? And, you know, in terms of greens, I mean, you played a couple of Tom's courses. I think one of his best and biggest strength is that he puts a lot of different greens in the ground. And it's not just him, but
the variety of greens
is just one of his biggest strengths. And, you know, part of it is, you know, it comes through the routing because he finds the green sites. And you always have, like, you know, already a pitch, like I said, on 17 that left to right was already naturally there. I just had to, you know, uncover a little bit more of what you see now. So he is very, very good at that. And then, of course, if you have shapers like Eric, Brian, and Brian, all of a sudden you create some cool, very, very either low on the ground sitting greens or, you know, pushed up and like a turtleback green of number two. And I think, again, like just having not the same green all the time and have different areas on a green, that's another thing that we have on course number 10 is there are sections of a green that is just slightly different than the other section. So there's a, you know, there's a lot going on in terms of variety, which I think adds to the interest of a golf course.
So changing topics a little bit here, you mentioned before that you're originally from Germany. You know, just to begin with, golf in Germany, I don't really know a lot about it, but how would you say it's different from golf in the, you know, in America or in the UK?
Well, first of all, we kind of miss that window of the golden age of golf course architecture. So yeah, we do have a couple of Harry Cole golf courses, but, you know, some of them did some work to the greens, to the bunkers, to sometimes everything. And just the only thing that's left is for the most time, like the routing. And yes, sometimes you can see like some of the of Harry Cole's genius there. But then you keep walking and you're kind of like, okay, and now what's happening now? So you're at a dead end and something happened there. I heard a golf manager at some point say, if it comes to golf and golf course architecture, we're more like a third world country like Togo. And that's,
Togo came to mind.
Huh. I'm sorry for Togo. but, you know, I think, you know, that's the thing. Like, we're very, very proud of, you know, what we know about golf in Germany and we're trying to achieve. But it's also about, you know, let's look outside of Germany and what's there and why is it good? And hey, let's just reach out to someone in America and see what they would suggest, you know. And this is a long way to answer your question. I got in touch with Tom because sitting in an office and designing golf courses out of a library wasn't really cutting it for me. I didn't feel that identity of the place. I didn't feel, you know, how is the topography of the golf course or the future golf course? And I need to sense what's happening on site. And I didn't sense that when I was sitting in front of a, you know, computer screen. So, you know, at some point I was pretty desperate, looked up the best golf courses in the world. Mackenzie was dead. Shit. Ross was dead. Damn it. Colt was dead. And then at some point I crossed Corn Crenshaw and Tom Doak and I checked them out and on their website, Renaissance Golf, and Tom Doak has this amazing opportunity of the internship program. And I remember that I was writing that email straight away, that I saw that and I sent that email straight away of like, I want to do this. Please, 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 please answer my email. And this is where I'm at the minute. But how you describe golf course architecture and how you do it and what you do makes so much more sense to me. And I want to be part of that. And, you know, they replied and called me back. And I waited 2 years to get the opportunity to get that internship. But for me, it was clear I have to give everything I have to continue. And that's what I tried to do, to use that opportunity to stay with them.
So you did this internship back in 2011, right?
Yes.
Now, by that point, you were already working toward being a golf architect, I guess. You had become interested in golf architecture long before. Mm-hmm. I believe you played competitively when you were younger.
A little bit.
So how did you first start noticing golf architecture? Just to go back a little bit further, how did you go from playing competitive golf to being interested in golf courses?
So I played golf every weekend somewhere else, right? So you, for Bavaria and German, you know, it's not a tour, but you play your age group and every weekend there's a different tournament. And if it's like, you know, a team event or a single event, whatever it is, it's on a different golf course. So you travel there and you play. And I'd be honest here, I don't really care how I play. For me, it was just interesting to see all these different golf courses, because that's the coolest thing about golf course architecture and golf is like, every golf course is different, right? So you have this endless variety of like, yeah, I really like this place. Let's go and, you know, go to Bandon, or let's go to whatever. Like there's so many golf courses out there that you can discover. And for me, it was like, I remember that, I was 14. I was playing somewhere close to Hamburg, and there's like a par three and had like a kicker slope in the green. And, you know, maybe there are a lot of people out there, me included until then, that thought like, okay, there's the pin. It's that yardage. I got to shoot that like this straight and that's it. But, you know, if there's a kicker slope and you have a lot more room, it might be a lot easier to just use that to get funneled towards the pin. So I played and I thought like, well, that's pretty cool. Like,
wait, there's more to it than just going for the hole, and, right? There's a whole golf course that kind of exists around the target.
Yeah, exactly. It's not target golf. It's like, you know, you play slopes and you be creative. And again, like coming from Germany, I don't think there are too many slopes. So if you go, you know, to the UK and, you know, play St. Andrews or something, you know, some of the really cool old original golf courses, you have so many slopes that you can use to, you know, funnel back a golf, you know, your golf ball and be creative. And that was the first time I saw this. And I thought like, that's pretty cool. Did anyone actually think about this? Not just as a golfer, but like, and it was a light bulb moment. And from there, it was like, wait, is there like someone who's thinking about this? Seriously?
Somebody who built that?
Someone built that? What a genius. And, you know, and it basically started there. And back then, you know, there was no book about golf course architecture in German. It didn't really cross my mind that I'm looking too much into like English books. Google was fairly new, I think. So you know, it was an age I want to say where it didn't really cross my mind to, you know, look further. And, you know, by the time I studied landscape architecture, you know, my professors were all saying like, that's incredible stupid to, you know, go into golf course architecture. We don't have the 90s anymore. And I basically told them, like, who cares about Germany? Let's look outside of the box, you know? And I did an scholarship in England where I had professors. That was the first time that they were like, oh, that's cool. Okay, why don't you go and travel and see golf courses here and then write about it? And that's your essay for this course, you know? So, you know, I did that and it was cool and it was different and new and I felt like taken serious, you know, like that is something that I want to do. And, you know, someone's actually listening and not shutting you down straight away. But there, when I got back to Germany, I had to finish my degree just like a normal landscape architect and work then in an office just like as an intern to design golf courses from the computer. And it was my first day in that office that I looked up. Like I said, I
literally Googled. Your first day in the office.
It was my first day
like, already.
And I was I'm like, not into this. I got back into my room and I was like, I can't do this the rest of my life. I love this, but I can't do it this way. So I needed to find a different way. And that's when I found, you know, Tom and the internship program. And yeah.
What courses did you see when you were studying in the UK? It sounds like you did a little tour.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, you know, I saw North Berwick. I saw Royal Dornoch. I went to Hillside and Royal Birkdale. So most of the time, for some reason, I thought like Scottish golf is what I needed to check out. I saw the old course, of course. I was there during the Dunhill, actually, so I saw all of the golf courses, and that was just so neat to see like a historic place like that and how it plays and how it just stood the test of time. You know, it was just fascinating. I think that's the right word. It was fascinating to me. And yeah, just outstanding. If you're coming from a country, you know, again, like Germany, it was just fascinating to see those golf courses and how they work and how creative they were. So that was pretty cool.
What did it make you think about what you wanted to build in golf? When you saw those golf courses, how did they kind of change your frame of reference for, you know, the kinds of golf courses that you wanted to build?
Well, to put it frankly, like if you're putting on a putting green in Germany, it's flat. If you're putting at the ladies' putting green in St. Andrews, you know,
you have
the opposite of flat and you have a lot of fun and it's so cool. And, you know, it just blew my mind. And I was like, well, this is different. This is so different. And why don't we do this? And where did this get lost? Why aren't we building something like this anymore?
Do you have a hope at some point to do more work in Germany? I know you've done some. You've done some projects in Germany, but is there a part of you that, you know, just wants to completely revolutionize golf golf in Germany, like turn it in a different direction?
I would love to. Yes. Germany stays my home, and you know, what I would really love to do is restore a Harry Colt golf course properly and just really put it back to the glory that, you know, a Harry Colt golf course is. I don't know if there's ever going to be a possibility to build a new golf course in Germany. There are a lot of restrictions. And there's also the problem of a lot of the land that is owned, most of the time those are too small for a golf course. So it's not like in the US where you have like a big area that is available, you know, and you can build like one course or two or three. So, you know, I think it's pretty tough. There are not many golf courses getting built in Germany anymore, to the point of my professor back then. but, you know, if there's a opportunity, I wouldn't say no. But it just, again, like I learned from someone like Tom Doak how important it is to get a good piece of ground. So there are a lot of things that would dictate that narrative.
So most recently, I believe just before you came back to Pinehurst to do this whole function at Pinehurst number 10 that you and I were both attending earlier today, you were working in Scotland. So what's going on with Cabot Highlands? This is at the facility formerly known as Castle Stewart, which started with a Gil Hance course purchased by Cabot, and now a second course designed by Tom Doak is going in. What did you do at Cabot Highlands, and how is that project going?
I think it's going to be outstanding. My colleague Clyde Johnson is leading this. It's also his first time that he's the lead associate, and I think he's doing a fantastic job. Shaping looks outstanding and really cool. It just falls right into his alley, building Lynx golf courses. So there's a lot of fun shots there. And what did I do? I told him, just tell me where you need help. You know, that's the thing. Like,
it's kind of like how the Bryans and Eric and Blake did on your project here.
Exactly. Like, they were amazing. They came over. It's like, okay, where do you want me to work? And, if I had something that I really needed to figure out, I would just say, like, would you mind doing like this area here? And I know how big of a help it is to just, you don't care. You just help whatever needs to be done. If it's a tee box, if it's a bunker, if it's just native area somewhere, if it's a green, fantastic, sure. But whatever he needed. And I think there was what I did. It was like, I did a little change on one of the greens that he built, and then did big fairway movement, fairway shaping. And then, what else did I do? A cut through one area so you can see it from the tee box. So it kind of looks natural. So yeah, a couple of things that I did, but again, whatever he wanted me to do, I was happy to just help, because I understand like how helpful that is to just send someone over and know that, okay, they're going to figure it out. And after that, I can just cross it off my list. So, I was just happy to be over there.
Do you have a preference between shaping greens versus shaping bunkers or doing some other kind of work on a golf course? There are some architects out there who really specialize in bunkers. I'm thinking of Jeff Bradley, who works for Corin Crenshaw. He has really owned this bunker shaping thing for the past couple of decades. There are other architects who really enjoy, get a lot out of shaping greens and feel they have some sort of expertise in that area. Do you have a preference along those lines?
I think that's another area where I would say we were taught differently. We grew up differently under Tom.
So this is maybe a difference between Corin Crenshaw's operation and Tom Doak's operation. It does seem like, that's a good point. It seems like a lot of Corin Crenshaw shapers start to specialize in some aspect of the construction process. Not all of them.
There
are certain shapers who really do focus on bunkers, and there are others who really do focus on greens.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that aspect really fits us. Like, whatever needs to be done, basically. And, out here, Eric Iverson shaped a couple of tee boxes. Took him no time.
It's child's play for Eric Iverson at this point.
Okay, sure. I'll build you some tees. Which is super nice.
All right. Well, Angela, thank you for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it. Congratulations on the work at Pinehurst number 10, and looking forward to seeing what else you do.
Thank you so much, Garrett. What a pleasure to be here.
This episode of the Fried Egg Golf Podcast was produced by Meg Atkins. Thank you, Meg. If you'd like to support Fried Egg Golf on another level, consider joining Club TFE. That's at thefriedegg.com/membership. It's $120 a year, and you get a lot with it, a lot of little perks and benefits and a great community. But one of the main offerings in Club TFE is weekly exclusive content. We have Tour Guide, which is a weekly feature about goings on in the world of professional golf. We have Design Notebook, which dives deep into the golf architecture news and issues of the day. We have Course Profiles, which are in-depth discussions of golf courses with great imagery provided by our team at Fried Egg Golf. So if any of that sounds appealing to you, you might like Club TFE. Again, that's thefriedegg.com/membership. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back again soon with another episode.